Everybody, I'm John Holcomb. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic. Can y'all hear me okay? Okay. I'm not comfortable with these things. First off, Milton and the board, thank you for the opportunity to speak. One of the things that my sponsor, Jim, has shown me over the years is how to carry the message. Kind of like St. Francis said, preach the gospel and use words if necessary. Jim showed me how to do that. I thank you for that. What a roundup. Thank y'all. The hospitality. I was thinking last night and this morning, what am I going to take home from this? Something from each speaker. Tony, the program that gives a father back to his son and a son back to his father. It's happened for me. My son's in recovery now. From heroin addiction, and he's clean and sober. Miss Kitty, picking up the pieces, putting our life back together. My wife has been active in Al-Anon for 20 some odd years. Gloria, thank you for your help. And that desert scene, and the fact that I'm not alone. And Ray, helping me to work with a newcomer, whether it be a sponsee or a person just in his first couple of meetings. Be quiet, because you don't know what you're pleading guilty to just yet. Read. Thank y'all for that. I'm taking that along with other things. Leslie and I yesterday had the opportunity to see the All Saints Church there on the campus of the University of the South. And I thought about that time that Bill talks about in his story. And he had wanted God, and God had come. And at least to this point, that happened yesterday, and worldly clamors have not drowned that out yet. I thank God for that. Sobriety date, 7/12 of 99. Home group is Serenity now. And Jim S. is my sponsor. He's been my sponsor since 1988, when Julius and Walter died within 90 days of each other. These guys were modern-day Bill and Bob's to me. And all of a sudden, they were dead, you know? It crushed me. What am I going to do? I'd put them up on a pedestal. We were talking, and a bunch of us, and who we're going to get for, because they sponsored tons of folks. And I went back in my mind and then thought about Jim. Jim was the very first person I talked to at my very first AA meeting back in early 80s. I got here by the way of an ultimatum. I don't know about y'all. It wasn't a special invitation. It was an ultimatum by my wife. And just to ensure that things happened her way. She went behind my back and she called the central office. And she talked to this guy named Herschel. And Herschel had been sober forever. And he said, "I tell you what, you tell him, you get him to come down to the Eastern group. They meet on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock. We'll take care of him." So she gave me the ultimatum and where I was going to go. Hadn't been quite 24 hours since I had a drink. I'm shaking because of that. And the fact that I was scared to death. But I knew she meant business. And so here I go in my Snap-on truck. Everybody knew I drove that truck. It's like a spotlight, I felt like, on me. And I got down there to that place in Woodlawn. And I saw the door, and I saw that little AA sign above the door. I'd never seen that sign before. See, I passed that place hundreds of times going to high school. And I never noticed that sign above the door. Never noticed it. Never looked for it, but not until that night. And I'm shaking. I open that door, and there's these steps going up to what I don't know. This is my first meeting. I've never talked to anybody that's been to a meeting. I've never seen it on TV. Hadn't seen it in any movie. Hadn't read about it in a magazine. I don't have a clue what y'all do at these meetings. And I walk up those steps, shaking, and I look over, and there's this big burly guy that's across the room. And he looks at me, and I know I'm a deer in the headlights. I know it. And Jim comes over there, and he does something, and I hope I never forget this. He does something that's never been done to me up until that point. He talked to me about his drinking, not about mine. And I couldn't brick a wall against him. And I listened. And then we went into this room, not quite as big as this, but I recall there was a stage and there was a podium and there was a microphone. Except at that meeting, this microphone had like 75 feet of cord to it. I've never been to a meeting, don't know what they're getting ready to do. All I recall is the chairman, he said, or whatever he said, about the meeting topic, and then he gets the microphone and he takes it down into the group, and then one by one these people are introducing themselves as alcoholics, and then they're saying whatever they... Now they had an amplifier over here, and they had these speakers because looking out over, everybody had gray hair, gray beards. Here I am, I'm in my 30s, their average age got to be 70. And I'm thinking, what the hell has my wife got me into now, you know? Hell, I got 25 more years of drinking before I'm an alcoholic. Look at this. Each one of them introduced themselves as an alcoholic. They say whatever they say. And I'm not a front row person. I'm kind of towards the back. And that microphone's getting closer to me. I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to say? Because I've only said it twice before. In my home, I was drunk when I said it. I was under duress. She was on me. I mean, you know, and I finally said, "Okay, Rosemary, I'm an alcoholic." Quickly forgotten. And here's that microphone, and here it is. And what am I going to say? And I look back on that. And just to ensure that things happened her way, she went behind my back and she called the central office. And she talked to this guy named Herschel. And Herschel had been sober forever. And he said, I tell you what, you tell him, you get him to come down to the Eastern group. They meet on Wednesday nights, 8 o'clock. We'll take care of him. So she gave me the ultimatum and where I was going to go. Hadn't been quite 24 hours since I had a drink. I'm shaking because of that. And the fact that I was scared to death. But I knew she meant business. And so here I go in my Snap-on truck. Everybody knew I drove that truck. It's like a spotlight, I felt like, on me. And I got down there to that place in Woodlawn. And I saw the door, and I saw that little AA sign above the door. I'd never seen that sign before. See, I passed that place hundreds of times going to high school, and I never noticed that sign above the door. Never noticed it. Never looked for it, but not until that night. And I'm shaking. I open that door, and there's these steps going up to what I don't know. This is my first meeting. I've never talked to anybody that's been to a meeting. I've never seen it on TV. Hadn't seen it in any movie. Hadn't read about it in a magazine. I don't have a clue what y'all do at these meetings. And I walk up those steps, shaking, and I look over, and there's this big burly guy that's across the room. And he looks at me, and I know I'm a deer in the headlights. I know it. And Jim comes over there, and he does something, and I hope I never forget this. He does something that's never been done to me up until that point. He talked to me about his drinking, not about mine. And I couldn't brick a wall against him. And I listened. And then we went into this room, not quite as big as this, but I recall there was a stage and there was a podium and there was a microphone. Except at that meeting, this microphone had like 75 feet of cord to it. Never been to a meeting, don't know what they're getting ready to do. All I recall is the chairman, he said, or whatever he said about the meeting topic, and then he gets the microphone and he takes it down into the group, and then one by one, these people are introducing themselves as alcoholics, and then they're saying whatever they... Now, they had a amplifier over here, and they had these speakers because looking out over, everybody had gray hair, gray beards. Here I am, I'm in my 30s. Their average age's got to be 70. And I'm thinking, what the hell has my wife got me into now? You know, hell, I got 25 more years of drinking before I'm an alcoholic. Look at this. Each one of them introduced themselves as an alcoholic. They say whatever they say. And I'm not a front row person. I'm kind of towards the back. And that microphone's getting closer to me. I'm thinking, what the hell am I going to say? Because I've only said it twice before in my home. I was drunk when I said it. I was under duress. She was on me. I mean, you know, and I finally said, okay, Rosemary, I'm an alcoholic. Quickly forgotten. and here's that microphone, and here it is, and what am I going to say? And I look back on that. I was afraid I was the only one. I don't know what come over me. You know, I hadn't talked to these people in years, but I, you know, for whatever reason, I felt like they needed to hear from me. Come 2 a.m, don't have a clue what I said. And then I get that bill at the end of the month. What in the world? Oh, my God. And I got to the point, and people don't believe me, but on a daily basis now, I will, before I start drinking, I will get that phone, take it off the, and I'll try to hide it from myself, okay? I'm sober, and I'm hiding it, thinking that if I get drunk, I'm not going to remember where I put it, so I won't make those phone calls. That's crazy. That was normal. Alcoholic life is the normal one. Now, I need to kind of let y'all know that there's not alcoholism in my family. I can't find anybody in my family that's alcoholic. Nobody. I came late in my parents' life. My father was 54, mom was 43 when I was born. Mother made particular point of letting me know that wasn't an accident, that she prayed me up, like Elizabeth and some others in the Bible. This wasn't no accident, John. And I had a sister 20 years older than me. And I listened to y'all talk about how you just didn't feel right. You know, you just didn't fit in. You know, you're always uncomfortable. Even in a room full of people, you're uncomfortable. That's exactly how I felt. I mean, hell, I had a sister old enough to be my mother, and my parents were old enough to be my grandparents. And I was an uncle when I was 5. That's why I started drinking, you know, all those awesome responsibilities on my shoulders at such an early age. No wonder I drank, you know. Mother was so against the alcohol. She was so against it. It made it attractive to me. Wasn't kept in the house. Interestingly enough, after she graduated from high school, her first employer, I did the math on this. This was like in the late teens, maybe early 20s. Her name was Joe, and her first employer said, "Now, Joe, don't you ever drink alcohol." He said, "You're too much of a perfectionist. If you drink, you'll become an alcoholic." I don't know how he knew that. You know, it just, it scared the hell out of her. And talking with her before she died, it helped me kind of piece together some things. She had those tendencies, but she didn't drink. Extremely creative, an artist, flower arranger, always got the blue ribbon, always. When dinner was ready, we come in, sit down right as she's bringing the bread out. I mean, it was just so perfectionism. We're kind of cut out of the same bolt of cloth. She got her relief in the church. I tried it, but it didn't work for me. Not as a little kid, anyway. Restless, irritable, and discontented. I was like that long before I had my first drink. Mother would tell me that my sister only had 2 whippings growing up, just 2, and I'm getting 2 every day. You know, and she doesn't know what to do. I mean, she's trying to get me to act like my sister, and it's like we're from different parents. Make matters worse, 5 houses down from me, there was this guy named Bull Connor. I don't know, some of the older folks in the room may remember Bull. He's the one that called the police dogs out and the fire hoses. He was five. Mother would threaten to call Bull if I didn't act right. You know, scared the hell out of me. Didn't change my behavior, though. I just couldn't do it. I wanted to do it. I couldn't. I wanted to stop drinking. The more I tried, the more I drank. Something in that book, my own resources marshaled by my will, insufficient. Tom Brady reminds me that I have an eye illness and that we have a weak cure. I can't do this by myself. But I had to drink every drop. I had to drink every drop. I get up to that Brookwood, and I get me a counselor after 5 days of detox, and it's a she, and she's tough, and she was the female equivalent of Bruce Barnes, and that's exactly what I needed, like a little drill sergeant. She wouldn't buy into any of my BS. Thank God for that. Carol was her name. And she told me some things back then that I still try to recall and apply. John, remember the effort that you put into your drinking and all the thinking and all the planning and all of that, and put that effort into your recovery. She said, you can't miss. You know what? She's right. I mean, I look back and man, it didn't matter. If it was raining, it didn't matter if it was 20 degrees outside or snowing or the fact that I didn't have any money. I needed that bottle. I found a way. Go to any length? Absolutely, to get that bottle. Absolutely. I can recall that today. And the reason I can recall that is because I'm in the middle of AA and doing the deal. And trying to carry the message, and those newcomers helped me remember that. I couldn't trust myself. And I come in here and y'all help me understand that I was drinking against my will. You know, that I've got this allergy, that my body, it handles alcohol differently than my wife, differently. When I have a drink of alcohol, I want another one immediately. Okay, and then when that happens, I can't tell you with the 100% accuracy of what I'm going to do. That's how I know I'm an alcoholic. I've never been in front of a judge. The only DWI I ever had was reduced to reckless driving. Never was in front of a judge. I used to say that I'd never been fired directly resulting from drinking alcohol. That's a lie, I have. It wasn't a big job, but I was fired nonetheless. But I didn't have multiple jobs because of drinking. Married to the same woman. Bless her heart. I mean, it's 40, going on 42 years, and I give her all the credit. She didn't give up on God. She almost gave up on me. She could still see that little sliver of a husband that she had married. Carol carried the message to me on if I wanted to get sober and stay sober, get active in AA. And I followed direction, thank God. Out of desperation, and I did it. Stayed sober for 8 years. follow directions. And then gradually, it wasn't something all of a sudden, it was gradual, y'all. It was gradual. It's time to let these other guys, these newcomers, it's time to let them step up to the plate. You know, and I don't need to go to as many meetings because y'all have heard it. Y'all have heard it. Happened to me too. Gradually. I moved from the middle of the room where the light is, the middle of the room, where the truth is. And I start going back to the corner where the dark is, okay? Where the old behavior is, where the whiskey is. And here comes that voice again. And I was coming over to Atlanta on business, and there's that voice again. Well, John, you can drink. Nobody's gonna know. You can go over there for that weekend and have a good time. And you can come back and you can pick up where you left off. When it comes to alcohol, the alcoholic is strangely insane. That peculiar mental twist once acquired, and I've got it. I don't know about y'all, but I've got it. Once an alcoholic, always an alcoholic. Found out it progresses. Even with me not drinking, it progresses. I was going to drink just for the weekend, and the weekend turns into 5 years. 5 years. 4 detoxes. Didn't think I was ever going to get sober again. I knew that book. Can't get sober on self-knowledge. Had to drink every drop one more time. And got to that point of desperation. Thank God. And that's a scary point because that part of me has to be beat down. That part of me called pride. To where that other part of me inside can stir. Right there, it's scary. It's the jumping off point. It's and I came to AA, and I want y'all to hear this. I came back as a newcomer. Okay, that's the only thing that worked. I tried to come back during those 5 years as a picked up that white chip and thought I could get sober on past action. I drank again. I would get that white chip. And I think that one time I was able to get the red chip, 30 days. And then I was thinking, oh, man, I don't want to remind them that I had that relapse. You know, so I'll just wait. I'll just wait, and I'll get that medallion. That's what I'll do. I'll just wait and get that. And I drank again. And what I found firsthand is I can't get sober trying to save my face and my ass at the same time. It won't work. It won't work. And I drank enough whiskey to where I didn't care what y'all thought. Kind of like what that old man said in that meeting. What those people think about you is none of your business, John. It's what you think about them. It's what's on your side of the street. I came back and I remember going to that first meeting and get the chip. And second meeting, I heard them read the promises. And I heard that those promises were available for me. All I had to do was work for them. John, that's all you got to do is work for them. Just work for them. Just work for them. Demonstration. Do it. And that's what I did. I still listen to the promises and listen for that last sentence. They'll materialize if I work for them. And I get this book, and I start studying it as a textbook. And I go to those meetings, that Metro big book. Thank God for that. And I asked Jim to be my sponsor again, and I was so afraid he'd say no, and he said, yeah. He said, John, you might be a little bit further along than what you think. And I said, I don't know. I don't want to think about that. I had lunch with one of the salesmen. He's the regional salesman for that place. That treatment center is called Bradford now. This is a while back. And I asked about Carol. How's Carol doing? Oh, John, she died a few years ago. Died? What'd she have, a heart attack? How'd she die? Overdose. I thought about that, you know, but she carried the message to me and the message to others, and it's the message that I'm bringing this morning, that there truly is a way out, okay? That the grace is there. The challenge for me is receiving it. It's a gift. Just open it up, John. See, Ray, the miracle is, through His grace, I hadn't had a drink today. That's the miracle. And I haven't had a drink this weekend. That's the miracle of this program. And the fact that I've learned and y'all have taught me how to do certain things. How to step out of my comfort zone. Okay? How to grow spiritually. To be uncomfortable enough to have to pray. That's a good thing. Get up in front of y'all. And share. And Julius helped me with this. He said, John, if you listen in the meetings, what we do is we say we share our experience, strength, and hope. And we do. But what we really do is we share our weaknesses. Okay? And by doing that, we set ourselves up to receive strength from this higher power. And I don't need to figure that out. I just know it happens.